People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. It's called Electric Smog, and there's more and more of it all the time.
The relationship was really very cordial and very stress-free, but only up until we started generating data. These folks were very, very upset and began to talk about how are they going to handle this, what sort of spin can we put on this, what can we expect from this, and from that point on, the relationship changed.
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publish the newspaper, People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. Microwave technology for cell phones is proliferating across the globe, and especially in America. This means that every second, low-level microwaves that carry the signals are passing through our bodies. Each of these waves potentially can interfere with cellular processes. Increasingly, medical reports are showing that repeated exposure to these radio waves can have negative effects on health. The U.S. government recognizes low-level radio waves as a Class 2B carcinogen. Ever since the passage of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, the number of these waves that pass through our bodies has been increasing on a daily basis. The industry, which has been granted special protection against health-related lawsuits in 1999, intends to increase these waves until cell phones can receive both television and the Internet. Our guests on this edition of People's Tribune Radio are Doug Loringer and Libby Kelly.
We now have in this country over 20,000 cellular towers, 40,000 paging towers or antennas, 240 microwave towers, 2,000 television antennas, and 10,000 AM and FM antennas, and another 100,000 or so antennas. And these are just the commercial antennas. And most of these have grown up in the last 5 years. And that doesn't even include the government antennas and the military radar and all the small fixed unlicensed antennas or antennas that are just not legally there that we don't know about.
They were interviewed for this piece by our California Bay Area correspondent, Steve Miller.
Dr. Neil Cherry, a biophysicist from New Zealand, about the effects of radio frequency radiation.
Body is an antenna. So you absorb the radiation in proportion to the resonance between your body size and the optimal aerial. People find it difficult to understand how a very small magnetic field could change cell behavior when the Earth's magnetic field is so powerful. But the difference is the Earth's magnetic field in which our ancestors were living is a static field. When you take a field and you oscillate it, then cells that are changing with time have this oscillating field imposed on them. Then that's what changes the behavior. Where careful studies have been carried out near high-powered facilities, an increase in a wide range of cancers has been found. The most prevalent is leukemia. And a whole range of leukemias, from myeloid leukemias, lymphatic leukemias. But the class of leukemias is often found. It's found in military personnel who are exposed to radar and radio. It's found in ham radio operators. It's found in children who live near a transmission tower in Hawaii. It's found in the U.S. Embassy in Moscow.
There's power in these waves that go through people. And it's something we don't know because they're going through us all the time, and we just don't recognize that.
Yes, and that's a good segue for me to talk about the children, because we do not recognize the effects of this radiation on children especially, and as well as on people who are more sensitively tuned. Their bodies are more sensitive, more susceptible. They may have had damaged immune systems from a disease or some inherited genetic situation they have, or people that are growing older and just are not as strong. And they are more susceptible. And children are our major concern because we know that children are now using cell phones and they're using wireless laptop computers in the classroom. And they are using computers and two-way radios as toys and cordless phones in their homes constantly. What is this doing to their brains and bodies? We know that children's brains are basically water, that water is held in molecules, and these frequencies are set at a point to cause the molecules, the water in the molecules, to dance. And so these children's bodies are being affected. The energy penetration is 70% greater into a child's brain from a cell phone than an adult's brain. And so we're looking towards our government to look into this for us, just like they've done in England. The British adopted a report done by a panel of scientists which recommended that children limit their use of cell phones and that the main beams of cellular antennas not cross school property. Just recently, this past couple of weeks, the German ministry came out with the same recommendation. And yet we have children using cell phones all the time.
What about the United States funded research into the effects of radio transmissions? Do we finance this kind of research these days?
Well, I hope we can discuss that more when we talk about the legislation, because we know that there never has been any research on the effects of chronic involuntary exposure to antennas and towers by civilian populations in this country. And we need that research desperately. In fact, that's what one of the bills are calling for. There is no serious national research program looking at the effects of radio frequency radiation on cells, on whole animals, or on populations. And this goes back to the origins of the cell phone in 1981. When FDA approved the cell phone for human use in this country, it did so without a body of research. And it guessed what would be a reasonable absorption rate, that what level of energy could a human head reasonably expect to absorb and tolerate without ill health effects. That level, which is called SAR, standard absorption rate, has gradually been brought down from 3 watts per kilogram to 0.6 watts per kilogram, not so much based on science, but based on engineering. And the engineers actually control the standards that we abide by in this country. And the standards only govern against thermal level exposure to this type of radiation. Thermal level exposure on one occasion for up to 20 minutes and does not take into account research that's been done prior to 1985. Now that's extremely important when you realize that there is a body of evidence that shows that non-ionizing radiation, including radio frequency radiation, can cause health effects that are not related to heating at all, but are relating to the way the cells interact with these electrical fields.
We're talking with Doug Loringer and Libby Kelly about radio frequencies and their health effects. In other words, the way that the United States has approached measuring this is simply to measure how hot an organism or a part of somebody's body gets, but there are other effects that come from the various frequencies and the increased frequencies that are passing through our cells every day.
Libby Kelly.
Yes, and as you go up the frequency, as you go up the electromagnetic spectrum, which runs all the way from the power line frequencies at the very low end, 60 hertz, through the radio frequencies band or microwave band, into infrared and then visible light, and then we're in the ionizing band of radiation, which is considered a carcinogen and which is highly regulated by the NRC and NIH and so forth. But the non-ionizing band is not regulated except for heating of tissue. And that's because the people who set the standards in this country are engineers. The IEEE and the ANSI, which are both engineering, industry-sponsored engineering standard-setting committees, determine what is considered a safe level of exposure, not based on biology, but based on engineering.
The United States has certain standards for exposure. How does this compare to other countries like Italy, China, and even Russia?
When you look at the comparative charts between the United States and other developed countries of the world, it's very interesting to note that the United States, Canada, the UK, Germany, France, all have very high levels of permissible exposure to this type of radiation in comparison to the standards set by Russia, China, Italy, Switzerland, and other countries in the Eastern Bloc. And we don't know what the standards are for underdeveloped countries, third world countries. As a matter of fact, they probably have not set standards. But by comparison, the standard for cell tower exposure at about 1900 megahertz is 1000 microwatts per centimeter squared, which is the power density measurement level of tissue absorption into the skin. And that is permissible up to 200 microwatts in the US and France and Germany. And it's not permissible more than 10 microwatts in Italy, Switzerland, and Russia. However, in the United Kingdom, they're allowing the whole country to be exposed to an occupational level, which is at 10,000 microwatts. That's exceptionally high, and the English people are challenging that with the European Parliament as a major human rights violation. We believe the reason why there's such a difference between these standards has to do with the influence that corporations play over government decision-making. And that accounts for why these standards are so different. We also believe that the drive for harmonization worldwide, which is being organized by an organization in the United Nations in Switzerland called the ICNIRP, International Commission on Radiation Protection Measurement, to harmonize standards worldwide, comes from the U.S. military and the U.S.-based corporations. So the drive to keep the standards high to provide global signal compatibility for engineering reasons comes basically from the U.S. At least that's where it started.
Linda Evans, who became famous for her role in the primetime soap opera Dynasty, is concerned about exposure to these types of radiation and outraged at the lack of power that average people have to try and do anything about it.
What we found out is that the public really doesn't have much of a chance against the Telecommunications Act. The way that it is structured, very few people will be able to beat it. What I want the American public to know is that they've got to have knowledge and information. That's why seminars like this are so important. If we had had the knowledge, we could have fought a better battle and perhaps stopped this.
Richard Harriman, a Fresno lawyer, presents the situation that local communities find in this way.
Pacific Bell can afford to advertise at $1 million+ a year as they are here by this wonderful stadium. They can certainly afford to take the time and the money to locate cellular phone towers in places other than in neighborhoods. The Telecommunications Act of 1996, Section 704, provides that we can't do anything about the health risks according to the Congress. But the local governments are still allowed to determine where to locate the towers within reason. In fact, what the law says is the only prohibition is that the local government cannot prohibit the tower altogether. All we're asking is for Pac Bell Wireless to be a good neighbor and not to put cell towers over 100 feet tall in the middle of neighborhoods, especially trying to take advantage of people in the Central Valley who they think are stupid and poor.
Is there special legislation that prevents people from suing the radio wave or the cell phone technology folks?
Well, there was an attempt made by the lobbyists representing the broadcast and telecommunications industries under the guise of public safety and ensuring the protection under the law of this new utility to build out into rural areas to grant this industry immunity from liability, with the argument that they wanted to grant parity with the wireline telephone companies in the United States. And while that argument makes a lot of sense, wireline telephones do not put out this type of radiation, which goes right through soft tissue. Mm-hmm. It has a quite different effect. There is a health effect here. And so just the amount of the dose raises question about the wisdom of that type of clause. Well, the industry has already tried to use the clause in court. Motorola used that in the case involving Dr. Chris Newman in Maryland, and the court wouldn't accept that argument. That doesn't mean they won't try again, but it indicates how far-thinking and clever this wireless industry build-out is. You know, just the terms of art that they use from the very beginning, talking about installing antennas in a manner that is ubiquitous, that involves proliferation, and that is stealth-like, kind of sends chills up my spine.
Didn't you mention to me, though, that there was, after the Telecommunications Act, there was another law passed that granted immunity from a lawsuit?
Yes, I just referred to it. The name of this law that I am referring to is called the Wireless Communication and Public Safety Act of 1999, which was supported for public safety reasons, to make sure that there was signal everywhere in order for people to stay in touch, and so that if people needed to dial 911, they could always be located. And therefore, they didn't want to hold these carriers responsible if, for some reason, their signal didn't get picked up and the medical dispatcher couldn't get the 911 call. So that was the surface justification for this law, which grants immunity.
How ironic, almost, that a law passed in the name of public safety guaranteed a lack of protection for public safety, but I guess we're getting used to this. Doug, you belong to an organization called SNAFU. Could you explain some of the things that SNAFU tries to do?
Doug Loringer.
We're the San Francisco Neighborhood Antenna Free Union, united in our belief that antennas should not be sited in certain locations, such as near on schools, hospitals, senior centers, or in residential neighborhoods. So basically, there's a number of ways that we work to keep antennas away from these types of areas. One is, I think the most effective way for people to do this, wherever they are in this country, is if it's an antenna has been going to be placed on a piece of private property, is to attempt to convince the owner who signed the lease of this whatever telecom company to break that lease. And we found that that's often an effective way to keep something out of an area. The only way a company can, in many cases, put an antenna up is to sign a, is to find a property owner who's willing to enter into an agreement. If that doesn't work, creating publicity, a demonstration, getting the local TV or radio stations out there, often works to get the company itself to back out, because many of these companies don't like the bad publicity, don't like the word getting out that people are concerned about the health effects of these things. Also, at the local government level, you can get temporary moratoria put in. That means for periods of time where local government will not allow any new antennas to go in while it reviews its guidelines and hopefully strengthens them to keep them away from certain areas. Those are legally permissible, and there's actually an agreement between the FCC, which regulates antennas, and the industry itself saying that moratoria are an appropriate way for local governments to deal with this. You can challenge when a local government is in the process of issuing a permit for one of these. You can challenge that at the local government level, and get your local government's attorneys to look into the case law, the federal appeals court cases, and realize that they do have some power now to deny these things. And finally, as we can talk about, we can work to overturn this federal Telecom Act's preemption of considering health and safety effects. And in fact, Libby just came back from Washington, D.C., where the Vermont U.S. congressional delegation is working precisely to do that. And that will be, it's important for people to contact their state, their U.S. senators and their local representatives to get them to endorse this legislation that will be coming up sometime in early September of this year.
Libby, what is it that the Vermont delegation is trying to accomplish?
The Vermont members of the Senate and the House, there's only three people representing Vermont. It's a small state. And Ben & Jerry's, by the way, is probably their largest corporation that has influence over their government. So you can understand why Vermont, with its pristine environment, would be on red alert about seeing arrays of antennas showing up in their state. And Senator Leahy got on this issue right away and said, well, I don't want my state to look like a pincushion. And he's been wonderful, Senator Jeffers as well, and Congressman Bernie Sanders. The three of them introduced legislation in the last Congress and never even got hearings because of the tenor of the Congress at that time. And they're hoping now for change. We now have a more of a balanced Congress, more bipartisan decision-making. So they're bringing new bills to Congress right after Labor Day, and joining them is Representative Tom Tancredo from Colorado. Tancredo is very concerned about his constituents who live on Lookout Mountain near an electromagnetic installation, which is giving them more radiation on a daily basis than any other civilian population in the world that we know of. And so he's representing them valiantly, along with the whole Colorado State Legislature. These bills will call for repealing the preemption authority under the Telecommunications Act of 96, Section 704, to forbid the FCC from granting preemption rights to the broadcast industry so they too can preempt local government in determining where to site these towers. And thirdly, to call for the first time for research on chronic human health effects from being involuntarily exposed to the radio frequency radiation from antennas and towers. So we believe it's high time, and we've made the citizens call from the grassroots level. And groups like SNAPU here in San Francisco are an integral part of that call, because all politics is local, you know, to say to the people who they elected to work for them in their towns, at their county level, and federally, to bring more sense to this legislation and balance out the needs of equity versus economy, and so that we can be safe in our homes and to protect our health and our environment.
So we're sort of in an earlier phase of a problem that is similar to the problems that we now recognize with lead, the problems that we now recognize with tobacco.
There have been studies conducted in other parts of the world, other countries, and in fact, there's quite a substantial body of scientific research out there. And it may be that this is, in fact, analogous to, say, the tobacco or the asbestos industries, with the exception of tobacco, that individual smokers don't require smokestacks placed every few blocks to keep their cigarettes lit, like a cell phone requires an antenna. The asbestos industry, for example, knew very early on in the teens or 1920s that its product was dangerous, and it did not tell the workers in those industries. And that's why they're now... there's literally millions of dollars in lawsuits that continuously get filed on asbestos-related health claims. That may, in fact, turn out to be the same case with cellular antennas, that the industry knew early on that this stuff was dangerous, but has chosen not to reveal this in order to build up its market and so forth and so on. And already there have been lawsuits filed in several states in this country, in Maryland, Louisiana, and Illinois, brought on behalf of cell phone users who are claiming that they have adverse health effects from this. So legally, the ball has already started rolling in this country. The industry is more than aware of what it's doing, and right now they're taking a very irresponsible position, which is to try to sweep everything under the carpet and not really educate people about the risks they're taking by using this technology.
Dr. Jerry Phillips was a research biologist and physiologist who worked for Motorola examining the role of radio frequency rays.
When I moved to California, Southern California, the 60 hertz work that we did was supported by a contract from the Department of Energy. The radio frequency radiation work that we did was supported by Motorola. The relationship was really very cordial and very stress-free, but only up until we started generating data. These folks were very, very upset and began to talk about how are they going to handle this, what sort of spin can we put on this, what can we expect from this, and from that point on the relationship changed. What we saw was that Motorola began to exert more and more control over the work, telling us what to do, telling us how to write abstracts, what to say in the abstracts, what to say in the papers. I said, how to do the work? No, don't do this. Yes, do it this way. This was unacceptable. I had completed our study of DNA damage, and I submitted the final report to Motorola, and I got a call from Mays Swicord at Motorola. Now, Mays is the former head of the Center for, CDRH, Center for Devices and Radiological Health at the FDA, and he left the FDA and went to work for Motorola. Keep that connection in mind. That's interesting. He also handpicked his successor at the FDA. Anyhow, Mays didn't like the work. Then there was another phone call. Point is, I kept getting nothing from these people. They simply weren't willing to accept my interpretation of my study, my evaluation of my study, my knowledge of science at that point, and tried to urge me not to publish the study. They didn't tell me not to. They just said, no, this isn't ready for publication. And they wanted me to do more work. I stopped taking calls from them, and I went ahead and published the study. It came out in 1998, and I wanted nothing more to do with any Motorola-related work. I wasn't going to put up with that kind of control. I wouldn't put up with that attitude. That was it. I think one has to exercise caution at this point. And what makes the cellular telephone research area so difficult right now is there is no money available for research other than that that's coming from industry. So, I mean, what does this do? I don't have any faith in what comes out. I have absolutely none, not with my dealings with industry so far.
All you guys are really saying is that we need a moratorium to be able to study this before that the continued proliferation of this technology not just continues but expands.
Doug Loringer.
Moratoria at local levels is certainly one important strategy for people to use right now to minimize exposure to these things, especially around schools, healthcare centers, residences where people live. That's one possible strategy. Given the reality of the proliferation of these things, we believe that we can minimize these right now. And realistically, once the studies start getting conducted and the results start getting in and more widely publicized, of course, many of us would hope that we can move beyond just minimizing these things and really starting to get rid of the equipment that's causing these problems.
Libby Kelly.
There is a need to take action even though we don't have full scientific proof. And what that means is when an activity erases the threat of harm to human health or to the environment, as we are now talking about, there ought to be precautionary measures, even if some cause and effect relationships have not yet been fully established. The website for the EMR Network is www.emrnetwork.org, and that organization serves as a networking umbrella on this issue in this country. And through there, you can learn a lot and be connected. The website for my organization is www.energyfields.org, and through that website, you can order a film that we've made on this issue, which is called Public Exposure, DNA, Democracy, and the Wireless Revolution. My phone number at CWTI is 415-892-1863.
That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. Thanks to the overwhelming response to PTR in our first year, the program is now available twice monthly and on the internet at www.ptradio.org. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society where the same technologies of robotics and computerization that are being used to displace millions of workers worldwide is used for the benefit of the planet as a whole. If you'd like more information about the League, our Speakers Bureau, or our other print and audio publications, you can contact us at 1-800-691-6888. That number once again, 1-800-691-6888. My name's Mike Thornton. On behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.